Hi, nerds. I'm Michael Moore, hosting this podcast for Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I'm here with Mike Infinger, Director of Information Technology at Clancy & Thays Construction Company. Hey, how's it going today, Michael? Mike? We go by Mike, right? Go by Michael, yeah. You go by Mike, right? I wanted to just kind of start off. Usually when we start these podcasts, I ask people about the names of the companies and stuff like that. And I want to point this out because I've already tripped over this, even saying this, right? It's Clancy and Thays. Clancy and Thays. Am I getting it wrong every single time I say it? Why won't you say it so that we get it right?
Clancy and Thays Construction Company.
Thays. Yeah. Yep. So
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how you say it. Most people hear it a different way.
It's just one of those words, right? So the amount of talking I do, I generally, try to get these things right, but most of the time I trip over them. It's time for our icebreaker segment that we have called Random Access Memories. I ask a question and then you respond with the answer that comes to your head first. So your first question, Mike, is if you had the chance to be any computer part for a day, what would you be?
Any computer part.
Yeah, you get to be any computer part, and it could be a peripheral, go crazy with it. Like, if you want to be connected via USB, go ahead, figure it out. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, that is. Well, there's so many different options.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, listen, there's so many different, you could be an adapter. I mean, I don't know.
I'm thinking just the main bus in general.
Oh, you're going to be directing traffic. That's what you're going to do. You're going to be out there directing traffic. That's an interesting one. We might have to come back to see why that was the answer. I'm going to come back to that one, and we're going to see why, in fact, you want to be a traffic director. All right. What IT position have you secretly been jealous of?
Security.
Yes. Yep. Good one. I like it. Yeah.
Something.
Yeah. Why is that? What's the answer of security? Why do you think?
I mean, nowadays more than ever, but over my whole career, they're always busy doing something. it's just more to the forefront of the discussion now over the last 10 to 15 years, right? And especially within the last 10 years. And there is always room for someone who is an expert in security to give an opinion, right? Or a recommendation on something. But oftentimes they know more about what's going on in the room than the people they're talking to. And, I sort of like that feeling, right? But it's knowing when to open your mouth and knowing when to keep it shut too.
Yeah, so. I like it. Oh, we've already started off in such a good foot here. We've got so many questions to ask later on. Here's your last icebreaker segment, and then we'll kind of move into the main one. But let's talk about what does unplugging look like for you? Because let me just kind of set this up a little bit, right? People will refer to the term, I'm taking a vacation, I'm gonna go unplug, right? So what does unplugging look like specifically for you?
Well, yeah, it is often vacation. We've been taking a lot of vacations lately. The best that I can get away with, that I feel comfortable with, is not paying attention to everything work-wise on my phone. I don't know that I could do without my phone just for general information. And I try to stay off of social media as much as possible while on vacation. It's very difficult.
I bet it is, and it's interesting that you say that. And I'm gonna dive into this a little bit. Most IT individuals that I know, even when they go on vacation, are still answering messages and in whatever chat they're using. They're still sending emails. They're still responding to requests, especially with the technology that we have now that makes it so accessible to just do everything from your phone sometimes. I see this all the time, and no matter if the you know, boss or the executives say, hey, no, please take some time off. They still don't. There's a passion or something that or an insanity. Sometimes those are two things that are easily combined that comes with IT, right? I mean, am I alone in thinking this or have you seen this?
I think one of the bigger problems is in IT is that everybody feels like, at least when they're in IT, that they're the center of the room. And that if they don't answer, then something's going to go wrong, right? If they're not responding as quickly as possible, which is a good attitude to have, then you're going to, you know, you're letting down your customer, essentially. It's been something that I've been trying to get away from lately. I've got a really good employee that works for me, does a lot of work. And we split duty when we go out of town, right? He goes on vacation, I cover for him, and I leave him alone. I don't want him doing anything.
Exactly.
It's better for him to have a relaxing vacation sometimes than it is for me. But, you know, he knows the same thing. I try to stay out of it because if I'm 1,000 miles away and I'm putting my hands into something he's already working on, I'm more than likely messing it up. Now my boss emails me, I'm answering that. The president of the company who's his boss emails him, I'm answering that.
Yeah.
There's no way of getting around that. But, you know, I've tried, my wife will tell you different. I've tried to balance my way away from it when we go on vacation, but it is hard. It's really hard.
Yeah, no, I see this, and I see this everywhere. And it's interesting too that you said, you know, you almost feel compelled to answer the question as quickly as possible. So, you know, there's this nobody else knows the answer. I have to answer this, otherwise stuff that will happen will be very bad, right? That's so I guess that compulsion, that does that come from a lack of understanding? Does that compulsion come from no, I know how to fix it, and I got to jump in quicker so that you understand it? What help me understand where you think that compulsion to answer that question comes from?
Yeah, so I've gotten a lot wiser in that in the last several years, where I know, like I said earlier, when to keep my mouth shut. Because in general, the gentleman that I hired, he is much quicker than I am at responding. So it's almost annoying because I thought I was doing a good job. And now he's beating me to the punch, which is great. But it's he has the same problem, right? He wants to provide that genuine, here's something to try, I will get back to you in a moment, right? I'm working 10 other things. And, you know, where it came from for me is, I mean, I've always been the person to help somebody out. I'll pull over on the side of the road, change a tire. I will stop and get out of my car and tell you your tire is going flat. You know, I've always wanted to be helpful, to give assistance, needed or not, but you know, or opinion, frankly. And it's just always been that way. I mean, I started working in help desk in a computer store when I was 17 and didn't stop from there. I built the network at my high school.
It's amazing back then, though, right? I mean, you know, you gotta, you think, I mean, you have about the same amount of IT experience that I do. And when I know when I was back in high school, right, they didn't really have IT departments. The IT department was find a guy that knows, you know, and to be inclusive, to find a person that knows IT and use them, you know, and yep. And, you know, you got some perks along with it, you know, usually if you were lucky and negotiated well, but it's interesting that you say that because that's the same experience that I had.
Yeah. I think a lot of people who didn't actually switch careers into some really specific niche, And even those folks, they come from some origin like that within IT, or it was just like, you know what? It's either that or it's just one day, man, I'd really like to work on computers, or I'd really like to provide this service to a lot of people because it's a great job, you know? And it was back then that one guy at our school, and I went to private school, he was the Bible teacher.
Oh, wow.
So he just knew more than everybody else in the building. And I helped him set everything up. And then I went to work for a company later, and we replaced the entire network in the whole school. About 2 years after I graduated. So,
wow.
Yeah, that was great.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never-ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So, whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime.
It's amazing. And there a career was born, right? And that's amazing to think about, right? Because it affected the trajectory of your entire life, just being in high school and happening to know what you knew and going from there.
Yeah, I think I may be the first guy to have at least one 5-year plan actually work. That started when I was 14. So. Daryl had joked about, I said, and I was talking to him, I was like, hey, help me out. What are you guys going to talk about? What do you normally ask? And he said, this, that, the other, what is your first computer? And I said, well, back in my day, we added with sticks and dirt. Right? that's how we got it done. But my very first computer was a TRS-80, and that's an ancient piece of junk.
Did it have like a turbo button?
It had it had a tape deck.
A tape deck. Oh my.
That's how you saved programs. And every time I wanted to do something on it, I had to sit down in the living room, hook it up to the TV, and code every program that I wanted to. Like if I wanted to play a game, I had to write it.
At least it was a step above card punches, right? I mean, that's
wasn't far away.
That's a lot of, I refer to the card punching times as, the arts and crafts of IT.
Right. Very much so. It's a
great story of my dad, having stacks and stacks of these, card punches to program out stuff, and then them tripping and falling over the floor, and then having to try and make sure he puts it back together again in the right order. Shows
my worst nightmare,
but it shows the evolution of IT. It's just a continual evolution of new thing after new thing. And it seems to be getting quicker, more and more, changes, to keep up with, construction, right? That's what you're in right now. That's your industry. You're in construction.
We're a general contractor. Commercial construction.
So, are we talking commercial buildings or what?
I describe it jokingly as we build everything but strip malls and like Chick-fil-A. So, small buildings, but we do a lot of everything. Some of our biggest projects are. We got one going now that's like $240 million. It'll take probably 3 or 4 years for that to be completed, in Raleigh, actually. We built the building for a client that we now built out our own office in. So we were literally the first tenant, which is great because that creates a really strong relationship. The vast majority of it though is mixed use nowadays. Or we're building schools for particular counties, one or the other. And we do that anywhere all over the country. We have a great relationship with a couple of large warehouse organizations, retail spaces that need humongous, I mean, like 2 million square feet warehouses. Wow. And they build these all over the place. So
I'm trying to conceptualize what 2 million square feet is. Can you provide an example of how big that is in to my small brain about, you know, some analogy?
No, because it's hard for me to even understand it. I know what I know what roughly a million square feet looks like when I see the buildings. Most commercial spaces that are leased in a fairly decent sized building or a floor, you know, where a client will come in and lease out a whole floor for their company. Our floor, for example, I believe is like 10,000 square feet or something like that. There's gotcha. Many people over there.
You know? Wow. Yeah. So that's,
yeah, it's a million square feet is an enormous piece of property. Gosh, I really wish I could have something to equate it to. I just can't.
Oh, I mean, yeah,
it caught me off guard a little bit, but
because it can go vertical too, right? So that's what's really like really kind of messing with my head, because it's a, like, you know, how like wide is it lengthwise and width, and then what's the height? That's just got to be huge. I mean, I mean it's amazing that I can't conceptualize it in my head, you know, thinking about that. But I think it's because when you look at the dimensions up and down, side to side, that just makes it difficult to really feel it.
Well, I mean, you look at a football field. How much is a football field?
We're going to do some math on this podcast right now.
Yes, we That's are right now. We're going to learn. a football field is 57,600 square feet.
It's 57. Okay. All right.
So.
Wow. I mean, so that is, okay. That's pretty huge.
Yeah.
I mean, we can stack football fields and still. Yeah. Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot. That is a lot.
Yeah. So that's what 20 foot, roughly 19 to 20 football fields for a million square feet.
Wow. That's, I mean,
but you know, these warehouses are flat, right? Yeah. I mean, the most of the stuff that we're the particular client is most of it's all goods that are in bins. They have some robots that do a lot of things too, but mostly it's people running around on forklifts and various different things, right?
Gotcha.
I don't even think like a Lowe's home improvement, 350,000 square feet, 400,000 square feet. Maybe.
It's amazing that seems small now. Man.
Well, I mean, it goes off into commercial space too. It's like you talked about, you know, you look at some of these listings and stuff that we have, because we do a lot of where it's mixed use, right? So it's apartment buildings or condos and apartments on top of commercial space, because it's the big seller now. Like,
put right, makes sense.
Below the people that are going to do business at these places.
It's a true hyper-converged infrastructure there.
Yeah, and you're
in real life.
Well, yeah. The value add there is like all of that becomes sort of a destination, not just for the people that live there, but for the local community, and it, you know, so you get more foot traffic, et cetera.
Yep.
And you know, when they say there's 60,000 square feet of you know, commercial space, and there's 200,000 square feet of residential, there's five floors above that commercial space.
Wow.
So it adds up quick. We got some great clients that their development group and their backing. They've got some wonderful vision, and they have us build some beautiful property, and these architects and these engineers are magnificent in what they do.
So let me tie this to IT a little bit, because I why I love construction so much is that I end up using construction analogies when referring to projects, especially projects where things are still, you know, running in IT, and you have to build around them. You know, I use analogies all the time, construction analogies, to try and help people understand, you know, how you build something that's already there, or, you know, how do you end up, you know, upgrading it, and, or, you know, has it time to just demolish the thing down to its core and then, and, you know, start over again. There's actually a big tie-in in my belief between construction, and IT in the way that, you know, certain projects are handled. What's your thought?
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that. Yeah, I've been in AEC for probably 20 years, one way or another, right? One of the jobs that I worked at was a modular pharmaceutical company. So they basically built buildings that manufactured drugs for Pfizer, Eli Lilly, several other companies.
Right?
And what it was, what made it modular is that this happened in Charleston, South Carolina, and these things would get shipped all over the world. We had a building that was big enough that had three bays that were 100 by 330 feet. And this building was like three of those and next to each other. And it's 250, 270 feet on the inside. And each bay, I'm getting there with this, each bay had two 40-ton cranes in it. And what we would do at that facility is they would assemble each piece of the building like a Lego. And inside the building itself, they built another building, literally built the factory inside the building.
Oh, my God.
One into the other. And I mean, it was a magnificent process. It's very dangerous because you're talking about stuff that, you know, you're talking about a 9-story concrete wrapped steel I-beam built staircase that is fully built, that has to be stood up, put into place, so the rest of the building can be built around it.
Oh my gosh.
You're talking about a very, very, very dangerous thing. I mean, some of those things would be weighing 120, 140 tons.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
not a Lego that you would like to fall on you. No.
No. And to get to the end of this, the amazing process is that prior to one customer asking us to do this, and then they start doing it for every customer, before that and after that, the tolerances on the pipes for the liquids, the chemicals, the gases, and all of the things that it takes to make the building work was 1/1000th of an inch. So by the time it left our building and went to Puerto Rico or wherever it went, Brazil, it doesn't matter. When it got to that end, all they really had to do was stick that steel pin through the two flanges when they met, and they would be perfect almost every time. Because you have to have that close of a tolerance. So for me, understanding a lot of that back then and how they actually did the design and how they did the BIM and the CAD work, and relating that towards IT is, right, there's no way to have 1/10,000th of an inch of tolerance in IT. That's such a small margin of error. Like, I'm good with 1 in 100, you know? But it's getting these projects to fall in line and learning from those experiences in the past have really, really helped me sit down and be able to talk about a topic, visualize what it's going to look like in the very end, and then design every step with the greatest of consideration that I could possibly give them end to end. Working with, you know, like I mentioned earlier, CISO, working with a CISO on security, making sure that everything's there. I'm working with my lead network engineer, working with my lead senior server administrator, right? There's a lot of things that have to be done and put into place, especially probably over the last 2 or 3 years, we've done a lot of upgrades on things to make sure that at the end of the day, either one of two things is going to happen. One, it's going to go right. It's going to be perfect. Two, there's a red line that leads you back up to the first one because you gotta fall back and redesign the whole thing. I don't like that second one that much.
Right. So
what happened recently to me?
Oh, maybe, no. But let's talk about how we prevent that, right? Because that probably is, this is a gem of a discussion, because it is such a, this is such a problem sometimes with IT, because lots of times we're rushed, lots of times we're pushed into deadlines and stuff like that, and you don't get the chance to go, no, I want to get everything right, you know, and, you know, down to what you mentioned, which was less, you know, what was it? Less than a...
It's 1/10,000th of an inch.
1/10,000th of an inch. How do we design
projects? I mean, that's like human hair kind of thing.
I know.
It's so small. It's ridiculous.
How do we design projects to be as close as 100% as a molecule? Like, you know what? Walk us through that design process. Like, because how do they do it? And how can we apply that to IT? Oh,
wow. That was 20 something years ago. now commercial construction nowadays, it doesn't fit. You need a bigger hammer. But, you know, I can say that in my current role, one of the things that I've observed with, especially with our visual design and our BIM coordination team, is they put a massive amount of work, even before we win the bid, into coordinating not only between the architect and the engineer, but with the subcontractors, right? They want to make sure that the subcontractors that we work with, because we have new ones that we've worked with, that we've never worked with. We have ones that we've worked with all the time. It's the same thing in IT, right?
Yep, that's right.
They want to make sure that the bid that those teams of people are putting in on that project are as 100% or close within a margin of error as possible. To, you're saying you can do it for X number of dollars. We're not missing a beat here, because you're not getting any more unless they change something.
Yeah, that's right.
Unless there's a change order, it ain't happening.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then once the building, once even before the foundation is poured, these visual design coordinators are going in and they're looking at everything. They're looking at your HVAC, your ductworks, your all your MEP, so all your plumbing, your electrical, mechanical HVAC. They're looking at all of these things, even on our building. On our own fit up, right? The architect designed this beautiful space. I could tell you the number of things that they actually had to move around, where they had to have me in the discussion because it was relating to what was going on in IT.
Wow.
Because we had to redesign how we ran not only electrical, but, you know, a low voltage. So, you know, it comes down to doing a massive amount of due diligence at the very beginning. And for a lot of people, like what we talked about earlier, always having the answers, right? You have to know when you don't, and you have to find people that do. I don't want to walk in front of the vice president and the president of my organization and suggest something to them that either A, I am not confident in, or B, I don't have a fallback.
Right. And this is why you should wait to answer questions, right? I mean, we come back.
Yes, you know, it is.
Come back to that reasoning is, you were asked me a question, I will get you that answer, but you're going to wait until I know it.
Yeah. Two things I would say sort of get me on that one. One, I want to make sure I'm answering. Like, if I'm sitting in front of the president, we had a conversation a couple weeks ago about something, and there was half a dozen people in there. We're talking about a piece of technology that we were going to use. It's a touchscreen board, and they were asking all of these questions. And his bottom line question was, can this thing be connected to the internet? Instead of just saying yes, I started thinking of all the ways that I could explain what yes meant. That's just me trying to be nice, right? Instead of just saying yes, I started talking about, and in the most simplistic way as I possibly could explain it. I didn't know he's intelligent enough to understand it, but that was it. You know, it's like, just say yes. Just stop. Stop well, talking, you know, and just say the word yes, or I'm going to find the answer.
Well, and that stems from the and actually, it's funny because I've seen this happen with a lot of IT individuals, including myself, over the years. And it comes from knowing all the things that can go wrong.
Yes.
Right.
That's 100% where it comes from.
Right. I mean, so you're like, you know, that if you say yes in that situation, that Murphy's Law will make the thing not connect to the internet through some weird problem that it has, that, you know, it will give you this adapter that, you know, you can only, you, it requires that you can only get in a far and distant land, you know, after you answer three questions from a, you know, a troll. I don't know. This is what happens in IT all the time. Yeah. You want a simple answer to something, and you answer that question knowing that it's probably going to come back to haunt you later.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a good answer for what happens when it comes the other way, right? What happens when you get asked to provide a solution, and then at the last minute, how do you deal with the people that own the solution that you're trying to provide them changing it, right?
So they've
asked you to put pie in the sky, right? They want the pie in the sky, and they want this and they want that. And you've designed it out, and you've worked with your subcontractor, and you got a quote, and you're ready to go, and you got like your A/B quote. It's like, all right, here's what you want, but here's a little bit better of a product that'll do this, what, and that. And they go, that's great. You know what would be else? You know what else would be good? We found this one thing that we want to add. Well, wait, no. Can't add that. Good. But I got to go back and talk to that other guy, because what you just said is probably going to cost another couple $1,000s. Are you okay with all this? You just changed the whole scope. I mean, that's my entire career, right?
Scope change is so real, and it is, and it's easy, incredibly easy to change scope if you're not paying attention too, or if you're just, something comes in. Hey, I can't do it this way. I need to do it a little bit differently to put it in. Okay, that's fine. Go ahead and do that. Scope has now changed. And now that decision to just do it a little bit differently has now changed, you know, 10 different things down the line. One little small decision just to work around something that didn't work now has caused a butterfly effect down the line and will haunt you.
I think
for the rest of the project.
I think where you and I come from in our careers, that I think you probably also agree with me on this, is it is 100% our jobs to understand, even when we're doing our own projects, right? Because you and I both came from in a world where we did all the projects.
Exactly.
I know I did a lot of them,
but
it's when you're in the middle of your own project and you understand that you have to change your own scope, being able to eat a little humble pie is probably the hardest lesson to learn in that respect, because now you've got nobody to be upset with other than yourself. And you realize at the very beginning of that project that this might come up, and you may or may not have prepared for it, or you're sitting there another 8 hours that night. Do you know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, you're right. And it can be and I see this all the time where, you know, you go in and you create this great project, and then you go and talk to, the people that are in charge of paying for the project. Right. And they might be like, well, that's great, but I actually want it to be cheaper. Right. And then you're like, okay, well, let me make it cheaper. And that's where scope change will murder you, right? Because to make it cheaper, you actually have to go back to the game, you know, the original game plan, and start all over. But you can't change it in the middle and make it cheaper. It just doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Cheaper and more expensive do not equate often to the right or the wrong thing to do. I think as IT professionals and leaders, we often have our own opinions of what the right and the wrong thing is, right? We know what the right result is because somebody has already told us what they want. But we feel like there's always a better way to get there, or a better end result, right? Can we give you more than what you asked for the same amount of money, right? But when it comes to cheaper, I can't really guarantee that you're going to get exactly what you asked for now. You know, it might be pink instead of blue, but you know, those are difficult discussions. Always the best ones though, because you have to inform people of what's going on.
I bought a shelf from Amazon, and it was a cheap bookshelf. I got some books back, and I was like, oh great, I got to put all these books back. And this shelf was supposed to be, you know, five levels high, very cheap, $27. Like, I got this thing, and it was just because I just wanted to get my books on it, and I just didn't want to deal with it. And when I got it, nothing fit. There was bent, plastic, and stuff. And so I tried to put this thing together. I ended up cutting my hand, during this process. More things broke. The sides to it aren't on, so you can't even stack the books. They'll just fall off the side. I get the end result was that it was three tiers high, not five. I have some of my books on it, not all of them, and they're not stacked the right way. And I looked at this, but I stared at it and I said, I don't know what I thought I was going to get for $27, but it's my fault. And I said, and I just thought for a second, this is like what happens in IT all the time, right? I found this cheaper thing. It should work. It's not pretty, but it's just, and it should hold books. Nope. Nope. It won't hold the books the way it will, you know? And this is what happens in IT, and it relates exactly to what we're talking about. A $27 bookshelf on Amazon. Just spend the money and get the better bookshelf. I should have done that from the start. Now I'm down $27 and two levels of books.
Right? What the worst part is that labor isn't getting any cheaper.
No,
And what we do, and it's, I remember asking for similar things 3 or 4 years ago, right? And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's a lot of money, but grand scheme of things, what we do for a business, you know, where the budget is and all of that, right? Okay, that's affordable. That's a reasonable amount of money. Now you look at it and you're like, Can you sharpen your pencil on that at all? Well, no, that includes engineering, that includes travel time and labor and this, that. Well, why is it six times as much as what the product costs?
But that's the reality. And you're right about that. It's interesting because you are seeing, some of the products have come down in price as they've gotten better and more affordable. But the labor to install things it's just gone through the roof, and you can't, it is what it is. And being the fact that we're in a period of high inflation, we're seeing this throughout every industry. And so it's just compounding. And I would imagine, even in the construction, world too, not just from an IT perspective, but from a supply standpoint and labor, I'm sure that's going through the roof.
Yeah. When you talk about, so from the digital side of things, like my responsibilities, right?
Yep.
A lot of our folks in the field use iPads. And one of the things that has come down the pipe is that Autodesk is a product. They have ACC, Autodesk Cloud Connect. I feel like I'm saying it wrong, but it's Autodesk Build is what a lot of people know it as. And that's a piece of application that on a normal iPad, like an iPad Air, you can use it, you can function in it. But if you get into wanting to look at like the 3D model and the design and all of that, all of that is functional on a normal iPad, but you lose a lot of the quality. And sometimes it even actually will cause some problems on the app. Where we're finding ourselves now is I'm having people more often than not request larger screen iPads that have the pro iPads that have the higher end processors in them, because they're really wanting the performance. And they're like, Mike, I literally can't do my job. I need to have this device. What can we do? And, it's a simple conversation, but it's like now I'm finding myself with a lot of iPad Airs sitting in my office that I'm waiting on new people to start so that I can sort of pawn them off on them. I know eventually I'll see them back, but it's not an overwhelming stack, but that is the way our technology is changing. And frankly, I'm quite proud of some of our guys in the field, and we've got a lot of young guys. Construction is still booming from an opportunity perspective. But a lot of our older employees, I mean, we've probably 20 to 30% of our employment force has been with us more than 20 years.
Wow.
I've been there 10.
Yeah. That's forever in an IT job. I mean, yes. It really.
Yes. Our last CFO retired after 55 years. The current CFO has been there since she was 18. I won't tell you how long that is.
That's probably a good idea.
She's really, really good at her job, though. Keeps me on my toes quite well. But, you know, she's got somebody coming behind her, too. So when she retires, you know, I have no doubt that the young lady behind her will be there for 20 or 30 more years, too. So is definitely within the possibility. We have a lot of people over 30 years. It's amazing.
Wow. That's that is amazing.
Yeah. And I've got everybody from older experienced superintendents to young superintendents to people in accounting coming to me, asking me for different types of devices so that they feel like they can actually contribute and be more efficient at doing their job. So I've got to, you know, that's just the daunting part of our job, right? You got to listen to what everybody needs. We don't go too wild with it, but.
Well, my first director of IT that I reported to, he was at that position for what I believe is 30 something years. And you know, the amount of knowledge that was imparted to me from his from his experience and stuff like that is I'm still using it today. I mean, the way he broke down issues and problems and got to the root of situations and troubleshoot, all of that stuff is still, was passed on. So I can only imagine having multitudes of that in an organization and then instilling that and passing it on. What a great way to keep those processes moving and also adapt them to the new incoming group.
Oh yeah, we have in our operations team. They have a huge intern program, and we bring those interns in not only in just operations from the field perspective and superintendents and project management. We have interns for marketing and do all kinds of things, and that program is enormous. I never thought that we would hire that many interns that we did this past summer. They all wanted iPads. So, you know, that's a problem, but, you know, it is growing. I expect that much, if not maybe, you know, 25% more next summer. And many of those people from the first internship program from two years ago are now working for us.
And why do you think, there's such a longevity?
Frankly, it's the people, it's the employees, it's the real family atmosphere that the organization has. Everybody feels comfortable, right? They put a lot of effort into hiring the right people. And they put a lot of effort into making sure that they still want to keep working for us and with us and stay. We've hired on, a person that's sort of in charge of making everyone happy. She loves her job, by the way. She does. You know, one of the best things that she and I and the guy that works for me sat down and did whenever she started, and this came from the president, was let's improve the new hire process, because it was a nightmare for IT and human resources. But what was even worse was we got people that were bringing on as interns that should be going through a proper new hire process, and something that's structured, something that's repeatable, something that somebody at each office can remember how to do. And it's not just about handing them an iPad or a laptop and telling them, you know, good luck, you know, here's your keys, and telling them to walk out the door. It was about improving that first day experience so that after being engulfed with what it means to work at Clancy and Thayes for 8 hours one day and perhaps the next, depending upon what they were doing. They're going back to the people that they're friends with, that they go to school with, that their neighbors or their parents, and they're telling them, you know what? I've never gone anywhere and had an experience like that. And that's the best thing that's ever happened to me. You know, mom, dad, have you ever had anything happen to you like that? Or, you know, aged or experienced employees or, you know, they're calling the people that they used to work with. And they're like, hey, you know how you guys told me not to come over here? You know,
that's impressive.
Yeah, I've worked with a lot of smaller family owned businesses and I really enjoy that experience. This company has been really, really good to me from all of my various personal things over the years. I've seen them go hand over fist more for other people that have worked for us. One of the stories I remember when we started was because there was such a fluctuation in construction 10 years ago or before that is, you know, they would lay people off, but they would still keep paying them.
Wow.
Because it just didn't have work for them. They would say, look, we can't give you anything to do right now, but what we're going to do is give you something to do in 3 months, but I need you to go home. And
it's like a temporary furlough, right? Almost.
Yeah. And it basically was. That happened for a lot of employees. You know, not hundreds, right? It was the ones where it's like, no, I might not have work for you, but somebody else might, and I don't want you to go work for them.
You know. Stay. I mean, what a smart move. Really, honestly, to you know, keep the talent going, and be able to, you know, keep it there. It really is amazing to see and to hear that there are companies that still exist like this. I'm, you know, the company I work for is, I absolutely love, right. You know, so, I work incredibly hard, but I love every minute of it. And that's the, you know, and that's what you want in a job is, you know, I don't mind working hard. I don't mind throwing in extra hours and stuff like that. But I love the people that I work with and I love, who I work for, and I love what we do, and I believe in it. And I think that's similar to kind of your thought, right?
Yeah. So if I wasn't doing this, I'd be digging ditches with backhoes.
Well, let's just
glad be on the other side of the table.
Yeah, glad you're sitting in a
which is fine.
Let's talk about the IT crystal ball. Or the future of IT. And, you know, we've talked about so many different things here. Pardon me. We've talked about a whole range of issues and things. But one of the things that kind of stood out for me, right, is you were talking about projects and you were talking about, you know, how projects have basically changed and evolved over time, not only in IT, but in other industries as well. It seems to be like, hey, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. Just kind of move it forward. Is that a trend that you think will continue or is it a, you know, as we kind of look into the future here, right? Maybe you can expound in that arena and think about where are projects going to go? You know, when you talk about costs and labor costs being so high along, you know, even higher than sometimes the product itself, right? You know, and you start thinking about this future of where we're going, where do you think that's headed?
So let me see if I can do a good job of explaining how I think about this, because, you know, I always look at our estimators as if it wasn't for good estimators in construction, none of these companies would be in business. Because if they weren't excellent every day at calculating how much it costs to put a building, to get a building to come out of the ground, and figuring out that small percentage at the end of that, that's how much money we make, then, you know, we'd be breaking even at best, right? I don't think that's what Mr. Thays or Mr. Clancy had envisioned whenever they started this company 75 plus years ago. You know, for the estimating team to do as good a job as they do, and now I've seen them so heavily invested in the more visual design coordination side of it, which is what I saw from operations was doing for a while, right? And my boss is the VP of technology. That's his whole responsibility, is to make sure that visual design and BIM are doing what they're doing, and doing it the best they can. And he has grown that department massively since I started with the organization. But to go beyond estimating, right? You get into the field, and we're so heavily invested in virtualization of the build and of the design at the field level, in the hands of the gentleman who is responsible for telling the subcontractor exactly what to do or documenting it when it goes wrong, right? What's missing, what's not there, you know, okay, you did that, that room's great, let's move on. I am over vastly simplifying this, but, you know, and then when I mentioned earlier about the visual design coordination team inside of the BIM group and working directly with operations, they have coordination meetings on some of these projects on a weekly basis, because it's important to have these meetings with these subcontractors and these project managers within these subcontractors to make sure that they're all aware of the situations that are coming, you know, from one floor to the next or one room to the next or whatever's going on. If you just think about what comes out of an electrical room, right? Everything's in conduit. That all has to go somewhere. Someone had to design that. And someone had to make sure that it got from A to B. And that's just the piping. That's not even counting the electrical that has to go on the inside. And then you got to have a guy who can actually read drawings and understand it digitally or not, and put perfect bins on conduit and put all these things in place. So getting back around to it, all of that really comes down to efficiency, productivity, no loss of time due to errors or mistakes. We're looking at using robots. And there's a lot of construction companies out there that are doing this now. Looking at using robots to spray down lines for the contractors to come back in and to know exactly where the walls are supposed to go. Right, they still got to read the drawing and they still got to cut the wood.
Yeah, but it gives you that visual to be like, oh, wait a second, that's not going to work because of this.
Yeah. Or where a floor box needs to be, or a hole needs to be cut in concrete, or where a ceiling fan is supposed to go. Right. And there's a lot of great products out there that do this line drawing now. And we've actually been working with a lot of colleges and universities on developing those programs for these bigger companies too. And you know, some of the things they're also talking about is those robots, right? Everybody knows what Spot looks like in the construction industry, the, you know, yellow dog from Boston Dynamics running around taking pictures, right? But it's even better than that, because this dog can run autonomously to some extent, and run with a laser system, a LiDAR system on its back, and take visual representation of an entire room and go through and go through and go through and go through, right? Of the whole floor, and then do it again tomorrow, same floor. So, you know, one of the things that I always like to tell people too is, when you talk about efficiency and you talk about all these different things and all these tools that we go back to, is one of the projects they were building right next to the building that we work in now was one of ours, and one of the assistant superintendents was going around room to room. And almost every room in this apartment complex had the very same closet design, roughly. But it's required, I believe, by code that you have a sprinkler in each closet. And he's going the room to room, and he gets to this next apartment, and he walks in there and he's like, hey, there's no sprinkler head. What's the deal? And so he calls the superintendent. Superintendent comes up, pulls up his iPad, looks at a 360-degree picture that was taken a month ago when the plumber was in there, and says, yeah, there's actually a pipe in the ceiling right there. when they cut the hole out to look to find the pipe where it should have been, it was exactly where it was supposed to be. There's no end on it, right? So if they started testing plumbing, the amount of time that it would have taken to get to the point where they figured out exactly where the water was coming from, unless by chance somebody was in that room or the room
below. Correct.
Right? That's a lot of money. That's a lot of damage. That's a lot of setback.
Wow.
I mean, immediately collecting water off the floor is not the most enormous problem in the world. People build buildings all day long. It rains, right? But having damage occur and then continue to occur without being accounted for would have potentially led to an even worse problem. I've got a number of other stories like that too that go even further.
Wow.
About
wow.
pipes coming up through floors in places where they weren't supposed to be, that would have been in the middle of people's living rooms because it got moved and it got concrete poured around it, or could have gotten concrete poured around it.
Right.
So yeah. It is all about efficiency. It is all about, that's where I feel like it's going to be. I mean, we've really been designing it out ourselves and growing this group and this department to be more efficient. Our current VP of operations is all about technology in the field, and has been for quite some time, but he is really trying to push the envelope on this. Nothing like too extreme, right? No Google goggles from way back when or whatever. Meta headsets now, but we can do that and we have tested it, but it's all about putting it in the hands of somebody that can understand what they're looking at. And it's not only our people,
yeah,
it's the people on the other side too, right? Not every contractor knows how to do this, but we teach them and we want them to do it this way because it's better for them in the long run.
Well, you know, what I like about what you just said is, It's a great thought through answer that the audience should probably, take to heart. It started off with, yes, you got to have people that have the passion to take the time to get all this done correctly. And then you connected it with, and we have a whole bunch of new tools coming in that are going to make things the opportunity to make things easier, and if you integrate those two correctly, right? Then yes, we can have much better estimation, much better any type of project you're working on. You have tools at your hand to help you make them better coming your way in the future. But you have to use them correctly. You have to understand the basics. You have to work with other people and other teams to spread that knowledge so that all of that can get disseminated. What a great way to summarize and probably one of the most thought through answers to one of my questions about the future of IT.
It's amazing where things are going. I mean, I could talk with you for another hour on this, but
you can come right back on. Yeah.
the power of what business analytics are going to do. I mean, there are companies bigger and smaller than us that are already doing it. I'm aware of that, but the power of what business analytics are going to do and a lot of the changes that we're making in this organization, in a year's time, in 2 years and 3 years time, these things that I'm talking about today are going to be small in comparison to what we're going to be doing. And we're going to be blowing the socks off of our competitors and our clients. And we're going to produce some amazing buildings. And it's wonderful to be here now, to know that not only all the work that I did before this, but a lot of the stuff that a lot of people have been laying the groundwork for a long time have really come to this point.
Nerds, this has been Michael Moore, and I've been hosting this podcast for Dissecting Popular IT Nerds with Mike Infinger, Director of Information Technology at Clancy & Vays Construction Company. Mike, I got it right this time, right?
Yes, you did.
Thank you so much for coming on the program. I really appreciate it. And please come on again.
Absolutely. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.